Hey guys, Jim Cox, and I'm here today with an interview with Jason Demchuk. He is a lifestyle consultant would be a kind of an accurate portrayal of the work that he does. We had connected through some discussions. We had connected over on LinkedIn and got to know each other and wanted to share more of what he does and also learn more about what he does and what it means in terms of living a healthy and productive life. So Jason, thanks for taking the time to chat today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background? What do you do? And how did you get there?
Okay, well, in short, like my background is in psychology. I wanted to be a psychologist, but I was always really into Buddhism and just, you know, getting an Eastern perspective on the mind. And that led me to doing a bit of traveling and living in Asia and studying Buddhism, which I continue to do. But I've also always been really interested in food and in really just overall health, not just you know, using a natural remedy when you get sick, but actually what could I do right now for the next decade and the next decade ahead? And so that's been another huge part of my journey, just trying natural foods and all different types of lifestyle approaches to diet. So I kind of tested hundreds of different things on myself. And as you know, as far as food goes, I've been going more and more towards whole foods. And and so I'm really interested in the mind and the body, you could say.
Mm-hmm. So what's the nature of the work that you do with people? Like, what do you try to accomplish? Is it a matter of trying to get them on a particular diet? Is it to address psychological issues? Like, what's...
Well, people, yeah, it's a good question. And people, you know, I just listen to where people are at and kind of see how I can help them. I'm like, I can do this. I can do this. I don't try to sell myself. I just be like, well, I do this and I learn this and this is, and I like to live by example. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people just come to me, but what I like to do, and I'm starting to move more into this type of space, this type of program, would be to work with licensed medical doctors and other healthcare, you know, professionals who have a holistic lifestyle mindset, and you know, they only have a limited amount of time with their patients. So they can refer them to a nutritionist and or me, like, or they can just send them right to me and I can show them really simple, very traditional, you know, food preparing techniques that we have lost that are actually very simple, will save you a ton of time, a ton of money. And, you know, and then you have them for the rest of your life and you could even pass them on to other people.
Have you had a lot of success in terms of being able to get doctors to buy into that? Because it like my experience in terms of people that I know, just because I don't have a lot of run-ins with the medical establishment, is that kind of the tried and true solution is you have a problem, here's a pill. You know, there really isn't much discussion at all about diet, let alone the way that diet causes and worsens disease.
No, you're 100% right. And that is, unfortunately, the direction that it seems like our culture and the way doctors are, it seems like they're going more into what you just described. But if you learn to look for the other ones, right, then there's plenty of the other ones. They're definitely a tiny, tiny minority. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones who are already plant-based, for example, or already doing detoxing. So then they tell their patient, you know, oh, eat this, but it's not easy to just say, okay, there's so much to it. And I've been cooking for my whole life since I was a tiny, tiny kid. And, you know, I walk them through these simple, I don't call them recipes, they're skill sets, you know, so each skill, they're foundational. So it allows you to produce and prep a lot of food. And then each day you put it together and you have the staples, you have the stuff already prepared. You have like 3 pounds of potatoes in your refrigerator, sweet potatoes. You have the beans made, and then all the other stuff, all the seasonings, the dressings, everything's kind of already made. So the doctors, they really appreciate that, like, oh wow, you can walk them through this because this is what we want them to eat. But you know, food is an emotional, it's such a complicated thing. Mm-hmm. So it has to taste good. So that's where I think I could help them. So it actually, working with the doctors is kind of new, but I connected with them through LinkedIn. I wound up just, you know, mm-hmm. around many, many amazing doctors. And again, like, there's many who are not amazing, who are very, you know, not open-minded, but there is an amazing movement. And, you know, we realized naturally that like they could use my food experience, and, you know, and I can use like their medical knowledge, you know, and they could do the diagnosing, and I just mm-hmm. have to teach them how to cook it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because like just walking through the grocery store is kind of like for, you know, somebody on a plant-based diet and vegan and so forth. It's like you're going through a chamber of horrors, you know, it's like all these things constantly trying to pull you, whether it's, you know, Cheetos or memories of like a particular food when you were growing up, you know, trying to pull you kind of off the course and say, well, let's just, you know, I'll treat myself, or, you know, it's easy to get sidetracked and then sink the whole effort.
Yeah. And that's why I've really done a lot of research. I've read like the latest book, like Mastering Diabetes and Fiber Fueled. And, you know, I take the best of all of them, but you really have to make the food satiating. Uh-huh. Like, I don't believe in fighting off the Cheetos. Like, you know, this is, you know, I don't want to brag, but like, you know, if you learn all the components to my program and get a little creative, you're going to, because, you know, fruit, which many people are afraid of, is, you know, perfectly good. I mix apples into my salads, and, you know, you just get so much satiating flavor that I know what you mean. Like, yeah, there's certain things that sort of want to pull me. But the more I like hone in on these, you know, this diet and trying to make it more delicious, like I don't want to eat anything but this, you know.
No,
like,
I agree. It's just, you can just kind of feel, it's just the experience that I've had recently, and it's so you escape from there with a sense of, you know, at least I've, you know, crossed over that bridge. So so you've tried all these different diets, including like keto and things like that. So what's your opinion as far as the role that meat plays in terms of diets and in terms of people's health?
Yeah, like, you know, ever since I was a kid, like the idea of eating a dead animal disgusted me. I know that, you know, uh-huh. I was told, you know, you need to eat this for the iron. And so, you know, I had a weird relationship, and finally I just ate McDonald's one day and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to eat this from now on. And, you know, then I tried vegetarianism, but eating a lot of cheese and a lot of, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, okay, you know, I was never thought I would eat meat again. And then I came across like the paleo diet, and like, oh no, you got it all wrong. And it sounded very compelling. And, you know, it seemed to be like backed up by the latest science. So reluctantly, I was like, started with fish, and then I started eating meat again. And it was always kind of disgusting to me. But, you know, I thought like, all right, we got, this is a natural law. Like, who am I to break away from the natural law? Like, we need the vitamin K2, which you could only get from animal. We need the, you know, DHA, all this type of stuff was what I thought. And, you know, I kind of fell into it. And I would say I was healthier than most Americans, you know, because I always ate a lot of polyphenols. I took like a lot of supplements that like I think helped me from aging, but my gut was always really terrible and my weight fluctuated and my energy was low. But I just, you know, kept up with the latest. And then it was like keto. So I'm eating tons and tons of fat. And again, every time I eat, I have to lay down. I'm so tired, you know, yeah. But I thought I was really healthy. And then when I started now from what I know, and again, this is only like about 8 months ago that the light bulbs all started happening, but that's my personality. Once I see something, I can't unsee it. So now what I know about meat, that when you, like, there's so many things wrong, and it's interesting because from that side of things, the paleo, we're told you want the iron that comes from animals because it's called the heme iron, and because it's more absorbable. Turns out you don't want to absorb iron so fast. So the plant iron is better, you know? And also this is my like realization about the difference between the keto, like the animal people and the plant people. It really comes down to one simple belief system, and without getting into the ethics and everything, the meat people, like, for example, meat comes with prepackaged DHA, like the you know, it's a bigger omega-3, or the K2, the vitamin A in the liver. These are preformed in the animal. So the logic is like, if I eat this animal, my body doesn't have to convert anything. Whereas on, you know, the vegan philosophy or the plant-based philosophy is your body has the intelligence to convert everything. So they're on one side saying your body doesn't convert it well. Just, you know, the other side is saying, no, the body is perfectly fine-tuned. Let it convert everything and don't interfere, you know?
Yeah.
So like, it's not a week goes by in these past 8 months that I have not found more evidence why we don't need meat. And I'm still open-minded. If someone can show me the evidence, like, you absolutely need to have meat, you know, like, I would consider it. I would listen. You know, I want to just always stay open-minded, but so far, and then the way I feel is just so much better. Like,
well, there's also been a number of studies that have been done that link processed food, especially around meats, but even meats themselves as carcinogens, causing cancer. And I mean, in that sense, it's like, how can you trade that for any other, you know, kind of presupposed health benefits? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, unfortunately, because I know, because I was on that side of things, like, they have papers that are debunking those claims. So, like, for example, you're talking about like the TMAO, which is what happens when you eat meat. Like, the interesting thing is when you eat meat, when you eat a lot of meat protein, you're going to attract, you're going to breed bacteria that digest meat, and they have their own properties, right? And if you eat a lot of fiber, a lot of plants, you're going to get the bacteria that make them.
And so is this the nature of what's going on in the gut biome? Is that what you're saying?
Right. So when you eat meat, you attract these bacteria. And then after that, every time you eat meat, when they eat the meat, they produce something called TMA. And then that gets converted into TMAO. And I don't know too much more than that, but it's highly cancerogenic, and it's also bad for the heart. And then they took like plant-based people and they found none of that bacteria in their system. Yep. And even when the plant-based people eat like meat, they don't even get it, because it's like you have to eat meat for a little while to get it. But it's clearly linked to Meek, but then you'll get these papers coming out saying, no, that's not true. The TMA has nothing to do with it. And they'll just find some paper, you know? So there's a lot of bad research out there. And unfortunately, that's the time we're in. So people are being misled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot in the nature of a lot of the research, it seems to me, you have to look at what agencies are or what companies are sponsoring the research. I mean, there's a lot of hidden agendas that really aren't so hidden. And in reality, a lot of it is not looking out for the benefit or the welfare of the consumer or, you know, Joe Schmo. So.
Yeah. You know, they that's the unfortunate part is, even if it seems like a good study, it could be very poorly done and then most people, not only do they not look at the research, but they just see on Facebook, like some person promoting, you know, carnivore diet, they post just a headline. No one even reads it. Yeah. It just, the headline sounds good. And then, so it's really interesting. I like to get as deep as I can into understanding why this is, because this way I don't have to depend on other people's opinion. I can actually, you know, and then ultimately, and I think James, like, you don't have to be a researcher or anyone, anything, just try it for 30 days and do it the right way. And that's where I come in, because a lot of people call themselves vegan and they totally don't eat the right way. Like there's a very specific formula. There's some variation on the philosophy, but you know, my basic guidelines is like fruits and you know, green vegetables, a lot of raw, and cooked grains, cooked beans, and then something like flax seeds and walnuts, like that kind of, you need to get all of those.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that's kind of what I'm doing. My next question was, well, what is a real vegan diet? Because I, you know, am I off the path? But that sounds like exactly what I kind of typically eat anyway. So,
well, anytime you want to ask me a question, please just shoot me a question. But basically, you want to just, you know, this book, Mastering Diabetes, is really cutting edge research, and you know, but it's nothing new, because, like, you know, Esselstein, they've been doing this for a long time. But you know, keeping if you keep your fats low, you know, very low, don't use oils and butter and even the vegan butters, like, then you could actually eat fruits and stuff and use the energy very quickly. When you're eating the fats, it gets into your cells and literally slows down the ability of the sugar to get into your cells. And that's the energy the cells want the most. So
yeah, it's the larger molecules that take longer to break down, right?
Exactly. So it's like the cheesecake is like the worst thing you can do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, those days are gone. Although I must say that when you look at, there's been so many advances in the past 2 years in the field of plant-based. I mean, between Beyond Meats, faux meat products, which I use a lot of, you know, oat milk and what's been able to be developed in terms of, for example, ice cream. Like, I think the oat ice cream actually tastes better than usually the old ice cream, you know, milk-based ice cream. So, you know, there's so many more options than there were just 2 years ago, depending on, you know, what you want to, what you're craving, what you need, what you want.
Absolutely. You know, it's like milk, as you probably know, has like morphine in it called casomorphines. Oh. And I used to be a huge cheese addict, and there's literally it stimulates your brain similar to morphine on a low level. And once you get off of dairy, for example, in about like 10 to 14 days, your taste buds already change. So now when I drink soy milk, for example, just a little bit of soy milk in my matcha green tea, you know, it's like, it's so satisfying. The thought of drinking milk, it would be so rich. And it was just the addiction I had to the case of morphines.
Yeah. It used to be the same way about like cream for coffee, you know, a creamer for coffee. And, you know, eventually broke that with, you know, the oat milk. But it, you know, and at this point, I just actually just drink it black. I don't even use anything. But yeah, it was something that I felt like that was the last line. Like I could not give that up. And eventually I did. And thank God I did. I feel so much better because of it.
Exactly. It's like amazing. Every step you take, it's like a journey, you know, yeah. Every step you take, you actually feel better, and you know, like you're doing a more ethical thing. Like, not that, you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other, but yeah, it's just amazing. Like, and again, your taste buds will change. So it's mm-hmm. like, it's just this short period of transition. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I get all these benefits. And all I had to do was like give up something that really wasn't that good. It was just something I was addicted to and used to.
So is there a way, given the importance of like the gut biome, and I don't know the answer to this, but is there a way to kind of quickly improve the quality of what's going on in a person's gut biome to improve their health situation?
Absolutely. You know, and that's a big part of like my program, is to give all the food, a little bit of fermented food, a little bit of, you know, vinegar and stuff like that. But in short, like there's a great book called Fiber Fueled, but you know, even my own personal experience is, as I started eating more fiber, you will get, you know, a little bloated and get some gas. So it's kind of like, it's actually described this way by scientists, like it's almost like going to the gym in your gut. Like each time you eat more fiber, plant fiber, as opposed to meat, the good bacteria, the ones that really, that create the butyrate, that do the good things for us, they're going to increase, and the bad ones are going to die off. And in that process, you get gas and you get bloated. So the recommendation, I believe, is to like increase your fiber by like 5 grams every week or two. Mm. You don't have to rush into it. So now I could eat like 70 grams of fiber and my gut is like rock solid, which it never was, by the way. I've had like terrible gut issues since I was about 8 years old. And this is the first time they went away consistently.
So how long does it usually take to improve the gut condition to something that's noticeable? Like, what does it take to get over that period of time where you're going through the bloatingness and the gas and so forth?
You know, everyone's different. Like the book Fiber Fueled actually addresses this and has his strategy. I think it's all a personal journey. I got excited, so I ate a lot in a short time. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, it took me, it actually, honestly, and I was in the opposite extreme, ketogenic diet, low fiber. So I was excited to be eating fruit again and eating all these foods I gave up. I did have, you know, it did take me like, I would say like 5 months before I was like, oh my God, like this is like what a happy gut feels like.
So you can't rush through it, that's what I was trying to get to. It's not something you can rush through in order to get to the other side. And
maybe some people will have more, you know, I hear people like overnight, I lost 100 pounds, my diabetes went away, I had no gas. Overnight. You know, like...
Okay. I mean, I lost like 30 pounds in a month, you know,
wow.
over the summer last year. And significantly improved how I feel, but I haven't been able to, I've stayed around that point. You know, I haven't been able to push down any farther. So, you know, I'm happy with it, but I'm like, okay, what now? So I'm trying to push that weight down even further, but you know, that was based off of fasting, intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
So do you incorporate that in terms of what you do, intermittent fasting, or what you're feeling?
I've played with it for a long time, like while I was on keto, and then I was thinking about it, and then I, you know, study a lot of what the Buddha taught, and there's a particular formula he had, which was basically a 9-hour eating period. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and he recommends you start very early and you finish by like noon, early noon, which I would like to get to that point. But for now I'm eating within like a 9.5-hour period and try to be finished by 6 o'clock.
Interesting.
Because I used to be a real night. I used to just start. That's where I would eat like double my calories with the nuts and the dark chocolate at night. So now that I have a hard stop, it actually, again, just like anything, at first I thought this was going to be the most painful thing I was going to go through, and then 2 days later I'm like, it's just completely normal.
So what you mentioned Buddhism at the start, so what role does spirituality play in terms of a person's health?
Well, you know, the word spirituality, I think, if I can define it, as you know, I like to look at it as having like four layers. We have our physical layer, which is, you know, obviously the food and the exercise, but then we also have relationships. And you know, the studies have shown that the more than smoking, you've probably seen this, more than smoking, and is it like bad diet, loneliness will kill you faster than that. So and you could have a lot of friends and still be lonely, you know? So yeah. I think that's another component, is absolutely just as important as all the food we're talking about. But again, when you're not killing animals for food, and again, I found out, you know, dairy and eggs are still killing tons of animals. Then you actually, if you start to have, then all the animals become your friends, and like the love just naturally improves. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a double, another bonus you get, right, with the plant-based, but I would say that, yeah, having good relationships with people you can trust is essential, and also a good relationship with yourself, how you talk to yourself. So yeah, that's equally important. And then also, I would say another 25% is doing things for fun, like actually enjoying like your experience. Like I like to be in the forest. I go there twice a day. I like to, you know, go for walks, like, you know, just taking time to just not be thinking and just be enjoying present moment, going dancing, doing things like that. Uh-huh. And then the fourth 25% is, you know, having some kind of meaning, some kind of goals that you're moving towards. And there's a book, Man's Search for Meaning, where he was a student of Freud, and he was in the Holocaust, he survived it. And his whole thing was, you know, meaning is the most important thing. Having, if you don't have that. So my takeaway is that if you neglect any one of these four, you're going to be sick. You need to work on all four.
But by incorporating a spiritual approach, whatever their approach is that embraces those, that it kind of reinforces the energy of the soul, the relationship with the universe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
How is Buddhism unique in that?
Oh, you have a few hours. basically, in short, someone asked me this. I got interviewed last week, but basically, Buddha is quite the opposite of anything we've ever encountered, because he criticized everyone. He criticized the religious people, the Brahmins, who are like the chosen people of his time, and you know, they studied like the sacred books, and they were just Brahmin because of their birth.
Yeah.
And they, you know, so he would at great lengths criticize them. Like, it's not what you're born as. It doesn't matter your class, your race, your color, your sex. All that matters is what you do, which is common sense. the Buddha is just the master of common sense. But we live in these worlds where people have these worldviews where, because I was born to this family, I'm more special, or because I believe in this God, I'm more special.
Yeah.
So Buddha had zero tolerance for that. And but then also we have people who are, you know, atheists, they call themselves, or nihilists, people who say that nothing matters.
Yeah.
They don't care about if they hurt other people. Buddha was even more critical against those people. He said, you know, any sane person will understand that love is better than hate, you know? But then on top of that, he taught, like, you know, when you listen to the Jesus teachings, it's a very short book, like, you know, couple parables. The Buddha has 45 years worth of teaching, and we have it recorded. Like, we have the books. It's like 100,000 pages of books of practical advice on how to act better, how to meditate better, and how to see things. It's called wisdom. It's like the most famous thing of Buddhism is just to see things as they are, see the reality. So a lot of religions, they'll teach you to see a little bit. And yes, I do see benefit in them, of course. Like if they tell you, if you believe that love is better than hate, but I think Buddha went further in that, you know, Buddha clearly said, don't take anything I say as fact, as religious doctrine. Just take everything I say and test it. Mm-hmm. If it works, adopt it. If it doesn't work, reject it, but see for yourself. That's the only truth in Buddhism. There's no truth.
Well, that goes back to, you know, kind of a, you know, the basic Greek concept of an unexamined life isn't worth living, you know.
Exactly.
So you have to really, you know, start with examining yourself, you know, and go from there. So
yeah, that's what it is. It's really it's not an outer religion. You look at yourself, the good, the bad, and you just make changes. What an amazing gift we have, this human consciousness, that we can look back on what we did and things we don't like, we can actually change.
Yeah. So what's your, being a Buddhist, so what is your feeling on reincarnation, and how does that play into kind of our behavior and, you know, what we're doing to ourselves and to the world?
Well, without a huge long discussion, even when they asked the Buddha, he did teach about reincarnation, and that's a loaded word, but he mostly avoided like the direct answering and taught more by examples. But you know, if you, without really having a good practice at being able to look at your own mind, which takes a lot of training to get to, you know, the Buddha, you know, by examining the moment by moment passing of your consciousness, and, you know, quantum physics and some, you know, consciousness, like we take it for granted that our consciousness is something that is like a byproduct of our body, of our brain. But that's never been proven. It's called one of the hard questions. It's one of these unanswered questions. Like nobody understands where consciousness or self, this subjective experience that obviously animals have, right? Mm-hmm. There's no understanding of where that really comes from. Like we could measure the brain and see that, you know, okay, they're probably thinking this, but the actual experience that I am having of this present moment talking to you, right? So that's what we're looking at, you know, in Buddhism first. As you get to know that, I'll just say that instead of worrying about the reincarnation, get to know yourself on a very, very intimate level. But also, you could just say that, even if you don't want to think about your next life, if you make small changes today, you know it's going to affect next week. So you might as well just start making the positive changes now. Now, it's going to change your life. Like the Buddha says, if you're more kind and generous, you're going to get rewarded, not the other way around. Whereas people, if you're stingy, you're actually going to wind up without friends and even more broke, you know. But if you, so he taught these profound wisdom that sounds counterproductive, you know, but try it out, try this karma out, and then you'll see improvements in this life. Mm-hmm. Now, and according to him, that benefit will go on even after you die.
Yeah.
You know, he says, like, all your wealth, all your children, you know, all your property will not carry with you when the body falls away, but your actions will follow you.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't just tell you to believe him. He, like I said, there is a method to know for certain. I shouldn't say certain, but to see and understand reincarnation, if it's true or not true.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who claims to have like this, you know, this, oh no, there's no reincarnation. I know it. Like that's, you know, in Buddhism, it's, you're trained to look at all different possibilities.
Interesting.
Yeah, if reincarnation is real or not real, what I think about it does not change it. It either is or it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, people think, well, I don't believe in it. Well, you don't have to believe in anything. It doesn't change it from being what is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tough question, though.
That's good, though. I appreciate that. So, Jason, if people want to connect you to learn more about the work that you do, do you have a website? Do you have an email they can dial you up at?
Yeah, well, I'm active on LinkedIn, where we met. I really like that platform. And you could see my story a little bit on there. That's Jason Demchuk. If there's only one Jason Demchuk on LinkedIn, Demchok, or you put it in the show. And then, and you could find me, you could email me at jason.demchuk@gmail.com. That's probably the best way. I like to get, just speak to people directly. And then I'm on Instagram, is optimized being. And you could see my food on there. And then the website is theoptimizedbeing.com.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to chat today, and we'll have to do some more in the months and years to come.
No, thank you. These were great questions. It really got me, you know, speaking of things I've been wanting to talk about and I haven't really talked about much.
Awesome. Well, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, bud.
Have a great day.
You too.